Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. This episode is called, If Formula One is Dead, It Went to Heaven. That title supplied by Patrick Dering on Twitter. Runner-up Units Z, 52 laps, 0 naps. And Scott Taylor as well with Williams Beat Vettel. I'm your host, Richard Spanners. Ready? And I'm joined by Matt Trumpets. Exciting weekend for you, Matt.
Yes, I am playing hooky from my other race assignment this weekend down at the Brooklyn Circuit for Formula E.
Now, betrayal is a strong word, but you have FIA accreditation for summersf1.co.uk.
That's correct. In fact, I was talking to some drivers just yesterday.
No,
Mitch
really?
Evans, in fact.
Wow.
You'd be glad to know. He, late in the race, looked like he might even win, beat Sebastian Buemi, but he told me that blown strategy call, they thought there was going to be one more lap than there actually turned out to be, caused them to go conservative and almost cost him second place. Oh, that, and we talked about tires.
You talked with tires with Mitch Evans.
Yep.
Okay. Hopefully he didn't recall any of that mid-race and start bleeding performance as he sort of drifted off to sleep.
I said, well, the race is about to start, which is why I will be out of here a little early today.
Good. So when you need to go, just go. If you stop hearing Matt's voice, that means he's gone. We are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. We're also joined by our Mike headbanging race analyst, Alex Jeansy Van Jean, and also by our video producer, Steve Amy. Alex Van Jean, welcome back to the shed. How are you, buddy?
I am all good, and I'm feeling very, very good after what was a fantastic Grand Prix.
Is it just that it's an amazing track, and it's really suited for Formula One, and it keeps spitting out great races, or have we just been lucky today?
No, it always spits out good races. It's a really fast circuit. The drivers love it. I was amazed how close they could follow today. That was really, really impressive. But no, because you've got lots of corners that switch back on each other, it gives the opportunity to have some decent overtakes.
And we're joined by our video editor, Steve Amy, as well. How did you enjoy the race?
It was one of the best races of the year, as far as I'm concerned. It's a great track. I love Silverstone, and it was a really ripper race.
Well, we've had two good races in a row now, so I think that might be the quota for the season, Matt. But why don't you tell us how this absolutely thrilling, classic British Grand Prix was won and lost?
Well, I would say, and this is like you love these as a writer, that the start was utterly critical, particularly the battle between Hamilton and Bottas. Because as you know, Hamilton looked for all the world like he had taken first place away from our plucky Finn hero. And yet, by staying on the inside through left field, Bottas was able to, although to be fair, Hamilton gave him excessive amounts of room. This was not Rosbergian room that was being left. So Bottas was able to stay on the inside and come back and then maintain his lead. But ironically, by winning then, he lost later on.
That is true. I think we'll go a little bit more into the race-long battle between Hamilton and Bottas, but I just want to jump to Jeansy first. It was critical in that early phase where, you know, Hamilton was really swarming Bottas. He was all over him. And that move at the end of the Wellington straight, was Bottas lucky there or did he have it covered? Because it looked to me like even when Hamilton did the switchback, it still looked like Bottas had actually done enough to hold it.
Yeah, no, Lewis had to go in quite deep. So he ended up a little bit wide on the exit of the first corner at the end of the Wellington straight. And Bottas cut back on him. Lewis didn't get the best exit out of Luffield. He was a little bit wide on entry and then all the way through Luffield. You can generally carry the speed, but Bottas managed to get a better run, cut the apex a lot later, on the power later, slipstreaming down. And Lewis was very, very generous into cops. He could have gone, if that was Max or somebody else, he could have been a lot more choppy. But I think he gave a bit of respect because it's his teammate and he probably knows he'll get him later on.
Yeah, well, I had that in my notes. Anyone else? And Lewis Hamilton is going straight for the Luffield apex, yeah?
Straight for Copp's apex. So he would have stayed where he was. He had the opportunity to then cut it.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Because coming back down the old start-finish straight leading up to Copp's, he comes straight across on him, but gives him about two cars' widths. It would have been half a car width than anybody else. So he was giving some respect to his teammate.
And speaking of video editing and production, Steve, if you were watching that live, you must have been going absolutely spare at some of the race direction when they cut away to the crowd in the middle of that move.
I couldn't believe it. I'm sitting here by myself watching the race in the middle of the night. Well, Jane's asleep and I'm trying not to yell at the top of my voice at the race directors. I bit my tongue.
It just sort of shows maybe that you've got someone who's a very good TV director, but they're not following the move in the same way that racers are, because I can see what they were going for. They were going for Lewis Hamilton is going to overtake. That overtake is done. We must see the British crowd reaction in the home crowd.
Yes, I guess that's what he was trying to do. Unfortunately, the rule is when you've got close racing like that, follow the racing. The crowd you can get later, the racing you can't.
There might be a missed Apex award or two heading the way of the video production team. I have to say, though, there were some absolutely fantastic shots during the free practices and qualifying of the cars going through Maggots and Becketts, starting down on the ground so you could see the whole thing and then rising up as they started kinking through the S's.
It was probably the best television coverage of the year, without a doubt. And I can understand that. They're close to home, so they can put more resources into it. But they really tried a few things during the coverage of this race, and it looked good.
However, with Maggots and Becketts, you could shoot it from a mobile phone and that set of corners always looks fantastic in a Formula One car. It absolutely takes my breath away watching when they showed Gasly's lap after P1. And he's not braking until, I can't remember the names, or the end of Becketts. He's not braking until just before the end of Becketts. So he's coming, he's already gone through 2.5 corners at nearly 200 miles an hour. It's insane. And I've stood at that bit of the corner where you look at it, and it's so much narrower in real life than it looks on the telly. It's insane.
Let's go back to how the race was won and lost, though, Matt. Yeah, interesting that you said, had Lewis Hamilton had got ahead of Valtteri Bottas, you feel that might have changed things up. But let's deal with the situation we've got, which is that Lewis Hamilton is swarming all over Bottas. They must have been taking lap time out of each other, yet the battle behind them is also taking chunks out of each other, which kind of separates us into two fantastically entertaining islands of racing.
Yeah, and the battle behind, in some ways, was remarkably more entertaining for the Verstappen and Leclerc show. Shall we call it the Max and Charlie show? I don't know. Take your pick. Because they were much more, I'll use the word robust about things. And Leclerc clearly had learned his lesson from the previous race.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, no, we'll get onto that. Precedence has been set for sure. But I'd like to try and think about how the race was shaping up before the safety car, because I think that's key. Basically, the field was divided into people who went for an early-ish stop around lap 16 and those who decided to extend that stint.
Right. Well, the earliest stoppers were Leclerc and Verstappen. Leclerc was in on lap...
Gasly first, surely. Out of the top six.
I will go take a look. But Gasly wasn't really. He was in lap 12. Yes.
Yeah. We forget about Gasly, but we'll see. Maybe he made more of an impression today. But apart from, okay, I can completely forgive that. If we talk about the top five, then yes, Leclerc was in first with Verstappen.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about race won and lost, so I'm really only focusing on the podium positions. But we had Leclerc and Verstappen who were in contention for that, with Leclerc being third, in on lap 13. And then we had Bottas following next on lap 16, which I'm not sure if they saw the pace that Leclerc and Verstappen had and decided that they should bring Bottas in before he lost his pit window, or if they knew all along that was sort of the lap they wanted to come in on for their plan to stop her. But regardless, in he came. The interesting wrinkle in this is that Lewis then stayed out another four laps. And my theory on that is that because Vettel was running long, I think they just simply left him out to cover off the eventuality of a safety car.
Oh, perhaps. I thought you were going to say to cover off Vettel there, which I wouldn't have wanted them to do. Jeansy.
Interesting question. What's the actual chances of a safety car around here? Because I don't particularly think of this place as a safety car track.
Right. Well, I was looking at the odds because I do like a little flutter. And this is one of the lower safety car probabilities. I think it was something like a third chance no and two thirds yes. The other way around. So two thirds no safety
car. So I actually think they weren't playing on the safety car because this isn't the track you play for a safety car for that exact reason. I think they were either trying for Lewis to extend his stint so he has fresher tyres at the end of the race, or to possibly put him on a one stop because Lewis was still good in his tyres. Bottas on fresh tyres was only 1 to 2 tenths of a lap quicker once the first two laps were out the way. So I think Lewis could have extended or just improved his end of the race performance.
So you and I were discussing the difference in pace. So when Bottas came in, Lewis Hamilton's got another four laps out until the safety car comes out. He said in the post-race that he was planning on pitting shortly afterwards. Was there any danger of an overcut? Because in the first two laps, it looked like Lewis Hamilton on his older tyres had the measure of Bottas on his outlaps, and the percentage chance graphic that they use for chances of a pit lane overtake went from like 20 initially up to about 40.
My issue with that graphic, it changes per corner.
Yeah.
And on a fast track like Silverstone, if you're coming into rubbish with corner names at this circuit, but the first chicane effectively after turns 2 and 3. If you're coming into there and someone else is on the back straight down by cops, they're going to be eating time out of you. So I think that graphic's a little bit irrelevant. But I very much think there is no chance Mercedes wanted those two coming out 3 tenths of a second apart because they'd have been side by side going into turn two. And I very much, turn three, and I very much doubt Mercedes wanted that. So they'd have either liked Lewis to have been well ahead or enough behind and let the strategy play out.
I don't know, Steve, how much do you think that they were going to stop the guys racing? Because it looked to me like the gloves were off and they were like, yeah, go fight. And I think Bottas and Hamilton are capable of doing that.
Well, as far as I could see, the gloves were off and they were, you know, they had let them go run and race real hard. I guess the overall rule is don't crash into each other. Go for it.
And the thing is, they've got enough trust built up that actually the team can let them do it. There's no history of those two hitting each other and ruining their races.
No, I mean, to be quite fair, both of those drivers are fairly gentlemanly, perhaps, you know, the most gentlemanly on the track, really. They race hard, but I don't think you could accuse either of them of, you know, deliberately running other people off the road.
No.
In most instances, they're not angels, but let's face it, they're pretty good. And I think the team did the right thing. They let them race and they put on a good display.
They did. And Steve, we're going to get busted in the chat room because I accidentally flicked to my green screen background. So you'll have to edit that out for me. Don't yell. But the chat room is now realizing that this background isn't real. So I think we're going to have to fess up. This isn't a real studio background. I am in a shed. Jeansy.
Only reason I think they're so gentlemanly with each other is, I don't think Lewis is threatened by Bottas.
Yeah, we were saying last week that after Austria, like he went over after qualifying and he was just like, hey, well done, like super good lap, like, you know, you're doing great, but I've got you in the race. Trumpets, is it fair to say that whatever Bottas had done, Lewis Hamilton kind of had a strategy around that? So had he got ahead first, you have to think he would have pulled away. Had the safety car not come out, he's clearly looking to just extend his stint a little bit, come out in a bit of clean air. Was he going to go for the one stop anyway?
I don't know if he would have gone for one stop. If Bottas two stopped, Mercedes would have two stopped him as well. The difference would have been the offset in tires. In other words, they would say Lewis will give you suboptimal strategy, but you will have fresh tires and a chance to chase at the end of the race. That's where your racing will be. And that seems to be very much what they like to do in these situations, because they don't want to undercut the leader by pitting Hamilton first. And Valtteri did have, I mean, he only had a tenth or two in hand per lap, but it was steady, and that takes Lewis out of, as Jeansy was referring to earlier, being put out side by side or in a place where a real chase was going to happen. Mercedes wants that at the end of the race, not right there.
See, I'd spotted something in practice when Jenson Button was on the comms in practice. He made a comment that you don't normally hear them make in practice. They don't normally pick on long stints of actual lap times. But for about five or six laps, every single lap, Jenson was like, that's a quick lap from Lewis. That's a quick lap from Lewis. Everyone else is like a second a lap slower. So to be fair, I think Lewis knew he had the pace in hand, and he showed that once he got ahead after the safety car, that I don't think Bottas had the race pace today. Again, kind of showing the form with him. He's a very, very phenomenally good qualifier, but he's lacking quite a lot, I think, in race pace.
Well, I think the pertinent issue isn't, was Lewis faster in race trim, but rather, could Bottas have enough pace to hold him off at the end of the race? It's not a question I think I could answer, but we certainly saw, for example, in Baku, faster Lewis Hamilton unable to get round a very wide Bottas. And so that would have been intriguing on its own, but it did not come to pass for the third main place where the race was won and lost, which was our friend Antonio Giovinazzi putting it into the gravel at Vail and bringing out the rare but not entirely unheard of safety car.
Interesting point now then. Obviously, Giovinazzi, I think he's made an error. He's gone off at the end of the Wellington straight into the gravel trap, Alex. No mistake?
I'm asking a question because I heard them mention in post-race was they think because of it was a very strange incident from Giovinazzi. It was like the rear is just all of a sudden really unexpectedly locked, and F1 cars don't do that on the downshift. So I haven't heard anything. I didn't get to watch too much of the post-race stuff. Especially not clearly because my daughter was screaming. I'm not 100% certain I want to completely blame Giovinazzi yet until I've heard something.
Always good to ask the chat room in this instance. I didn't see anything before I picked up sticks to come over and record this. But effectively what that safety car did was it gave Lewis a free pit stop and put him out ahead of Bottas. The other person who really, really lost out would have been Norris.
Cool. Matt, before we go to who benefited from the safety car, just going around the panel, do we think it was a completely necessary safety car? Jeansy?
I was under the impression if a removal vehicle like a tractor has to come onto the circuit, they have to throw a safety car. I don't know about the actual rules, but that's the impression I've always been given is if there is a vehicle on the circuit, they must throw a full safety car. Because I have heard a lot of comments on social media of people saying, oh, it should have been a VSC. Not that it would have made any difference to the positions, but I think a full safety car was well worth it.
I mean, I'm going to put it out there. The fact that it was a safety car and it benefited Lewis, Steve, I think that made the internet a little bit more of a fighty place.
Yes, it probably was. I agree with Alex for most of it that yes, safety car, you know, was necessary.
I agree. Yeah.
During that period, and the car was beached in a pretty dangerous sort of spot. I'm not sure what else they could have done about it. If you, the virtual safety car would have been better for the overall racing because it would have kept the relative gaps between the drivers, and we could have, you know, resumed the race with somewhat the same positioning. The real safety car, of course, concertinas everybody up and suddenly the gaps are gone, and the position where they're able to come in and take pit stops during that safety car meant that Lewis got the better of it, and it benefited him. Now, that's true. The internet did melt down, but that's the truth of it.
So, Matt, the first question from a strategy point of view is related to then what does Bottas do once the safety car comes out and Lewis Hamilton pits? But I think the question we're going to have to address after that is, was Lewis Hamilton gifted a win by this safety car? Let's start with why Bottas didn't come in. So he's there with 4-lap-old tyres, but he wasn't going to lose a place. So was there any downside to bringing him in, putting him on the same strategy as Lewis Hamilton and saying, okay, well, it's a straight fight now?
I think the only potential downside to that is that it still would have been, I think Mercedes probably did their math and realized having Bottas on a faster tire, even at a full pit stop, and then putting him on the fastest tire for the last part of the race would have been quicker than bringing him in and running him slow and long to the finish. If they did that, then any real chance he had at getting around Hamilton would have been limited to the first lap or two after the restart.
Well, yeah.
And they felt they probably would have had a fairer chance to regain the position with an alternate strategy.
Okay, so that's fair. And I think once that safety car came out, I mean, Hamilton was in exactly the perfect spot as well, Jeansy, wasn't he? He was in the spot that just meant that whatever Bottas did, the safety car was going to line up Hamilton Bottas.
Yeah, it was the second I saw Gio go off and I saw him in the gravel, I was like, well, that's done. Lewis is leading. There was no way he was getting out of that. And before the safety car was even called, I'm like, oh, Lewis is going to pit now and take the lead. There was nothing to go for. But
okay, so let's address the concerns of the internet, Jeansy. That's what we do here. I know it's if, buts and maybes, but firstly, I mean, I was gutted that the Route A narrative was gone, because that safety car robbed us of Lewis Hamilton with 15 laps to go on slightly fresher tyres, attacking Valtteri Bottas, who we know can defend. And either way, that would have been a bit of a better story than what we had in an already fantastic race.
Yeah, I mean, what we saw in the first, when the Bottas pit lap 16, lap 17, what we saw in the first 16 laps, we'd have had that for the whole race, unless Lewis got past any earlier, because as we saw, once Lewis had the lead after the safety car, he just gapped him. And I think the battle we saw for those first 16 laps was just because Lewis was so much quicker. It's the same thing, exactly the same thing with Leclerc versus Max. Max was much faster than Leclerc, like Lewis was over Bottas, and that's why the battle was so good. If the positions in both senses were the other way around, there wouldn't have been those battles. So the qualifying pace of Bottas and the qualifying pace of Leclerc is what gave us such fantastic battles today.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm just gutted that then we have to now answer this question, which I don't mind doing, because I don't mind doing what ifs. I know people got very upset at me for my what if Vettel hadn't ever crashed over the last 3 years mathematics, because they're like, well, that's hypotheticals. You can't deal with that. I think we can deal with hypotheticals. Did Lewis Hamilton have the pace today to get past Valtteri Bottas anyway? We had some clues, though, didn't we, Alex? We had some clues in what Hamilton was doing. I mean, even the fact that on 30-year-old tyres, he was able to put the fastest lap in at the end, doesn't that just show how much he had in hand today?
Yeah, I think he was on a bit of a cruise. I'm actually still flabbergasted about that last lap, because they caught him as he started that lap, and you just saw the way he threw it into one and two, and you're like, he's going for a lap here.
Yeah.
And then as he comes back onto the Wellington straight, he's like properly on the edge of the circuit. I'm like, yeah, Lewis is trying for a fastest lap against his teammate who's on softs. And yeah, I'm blown away by that.
Steve, have you ever seen that meme where they go, you know, if you ever feel like your job is useless, remember there's people who put indicators on BMWs, and remember that there's people who made a protective case for the Nokia 3310. So if you, now the new one is, if you ever feel useless in your job, remember it was someone's job to tell Lewis Hamilton to pit on tyres that he was perfectly comfortable on, and then tell him not to go for the fastest lap, and then watch him go and smash the fastest lap at his home Grand Prix with the win in the bag.
He was always going to try for the fastest lap, whether he had, you know, old tyres or new tyres. You know, it's Silverstone. He was going to milk it for every bit he could. You know, he was going to get past Bottas eventually, one way or the other. The team telling him to take it easy, you know, wasn't going to make any difference. He was, you know, Lewis, when he gets that killer instinct in his eyes, goes for it. And he was going to race it right till the end. The fact that he got the final lap was probably more to do with the engineers saying, here, we'll give you mode 12 or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And if we blow an engine up, who cares? It's all from the motherland and glory. Let's go.
Okay, so we've angered some elements of the chat room. This is the Lewis show today, they say. The Hamilton was gifted the win. End of story, they say. Let's make the case then, Jeansy. How can we make the case here that there's no safety car and Bottas wins? How does that work out for Bottas?
Well, if there was no safety car, Lewis pitted and he would have come out behind Bottas, there's every chance Bottas could win. Bottas is still a very, very good racing driver. And he kept Lewis honest. And I'll be honest, when Lewis was ahead coming out of Luffield, I thought, ah, job done. And then I didn't expect Bottas to come back. So I think we still would have had a fight on our hands. And okay, with me and you in this group today, it could get very Lewis Hamilton heavy. But what have we got to criticise? And unfortunately, you can't. Could Bottas have held Lewis off? Possibly. They're in the same car. They've got the same opportunity. They would have been on the same strategy, mm-hmm. if for not a few laps different on tyres.
Yeah.
But does anybody here think that Bottas is the better driver, therefore could have held Lewis off? I don't.
Yeah. So I think there's a chance. Right. So at the end of the day, just to round this off a little bit, we know that Bottas was a little robbed. He was robbed of his opportunity to play out that scenario that Alex has just laid out. But also, Hamilton was robbed of his opportunity to show just how much pace he had in hand. And I tell you, I like a flutter on the race. I never bet on Lewis Hamilton unless he's like 4-1 or anything really long like that, which the bookies will occasionally do. If he starts maybe like, you know, 10th in the grid or he's got an engine penalty, then the bookies really underestimate how easy it is for the top teams to get back up to the top cars. So in those scenarios, Lewis Hamilton back in 8th place, actually worth a little bit of a flutter on Lewis Hamilton. Normally not at all. And today he was on even money. But the omens were so in Hamilton's favour today. It's his track. He loves this track. It's the home crowd. He's bang up for it. He's got a fantastic record here. And the weather played a crucial role today as well, because it was overcast, which is Mercedes territory. And I tell you what, Steve, I never, ever bet on the fastest lap, but I was so, so confident that Lewis Hamilton was going to have the delta this week that for the first time ever, I did win and fastest lap at 9-1 for Lewis Hamilton. So I don't think it's a stretch. I really don't think it's a stretch to say that perhaps Lewis Hamilton, combined with the amount he was swarming him in the first 16 laps, to imagine he would have got past.
Oh, yes, I'm sure. Personally, I think you're right. The chat room is sort of fairly evenly divided between the two of them. There's a lot of people in there that are saying that, you know, that Lewis was really gifted the race and Bottas, you know, should have had it if it hadn't been for the safety car and for the fact of putting him out again on the same tyres for the second run, which was really strange. I'm not sure why they did that. I mean, we should have asked Matt all about that at some stage, I suppose.
So when, oh yeah, Matt's gone. Follow Matt at MattPT55 and his author wife at A Weaver Writes on Twitter. They write books that you might want to buy for your significant other. Yes, this is an interesting point, Steve. When they brought Bottas in, they put him on the same tire, which committed him absolutely to a two-stop. And I think that's what some people missed, because Hamilton had all the cards. In fact, go on then, Gene. See, Hamilton had all the cards, and Bottas knew he was going to have to come in at some point.
Which is why it's even more of a curious mistake from Mercedes to not pit Bottas under the safety car, knowing that he's going to lose 20 seconds at some point during the race, because he's going to have to go onto the other tire at some point. They should have cut their losses, put Bottas on the same tire as Lewis, given them an equal opportunity. He'd have had a lap younger set of tires, not going to make a difference traveling at safety car pace, but that would have at least put them on the same strategy. Yes, Bottas would have been behind. I don't know if he'd have got jumped by Leclerc or Max or any of that lot. But yeah, I think it's a Mercedes error not to pit Bottas on the safety car.
Well, it's the sort of error that we're used to Ferrari making. I mean, they've been doing that with Charles Leclerc all year. We're giving him the bad strategy call. So it is a bit weird that Mercedes did that. They're usually better with their strategy calls than that. And I was scratching my head. I couldn't figure it out at all.
So I think ultimately we can say an unlucky race for sure. Considering the qualifying, Alex, I got accused of being a Hamilton hater, actually, believe it or not, a few races back when I talked about Lewis's only real weakness over a race weekend is Q3. You got two chances to get a lap time in. I think if he nails it, he's faster than anyone, literally anyone, at qualifying, perhaps ever. But I think that on Saturday, he could have driven at 90% and put a banker lap in that would have got on pole, and Bottas didn't beat his own time in the second run in Q3.
Yeah, I mean, Lewis, I agree with you to a case that Lewis doesn't do bankers, and he is balls to the wall for every single lap that he does, and that's Lewis Hamilton. And I think if he actually went 90%, you'd kind of lose a little bit of it. And it was a very easy mistake that he made into that last section of corners. But it's difficult. You talk about the hate you get for liking Lewis, hating Lewis. At the moment, it's difficult to be a Hamilton fan because he's doing so well, making no mistakes. He's difficult to criticize. So you just sound like a fanboy. And I'm guilty of it. You know, it's no surprise that I'm a fan of Hamilton's, but at the moment I've got nothing to criticize him for. It does everything right. I can't get hate for stating facts.
Oh yes, you can. We have a YouTube channel. Let's move on from the Lewis and Bottas fight. Then we're going to talk about the fantastic battle between Max Verstappen and Charles Leclerc after this.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Alex Van Gene, Jeansy Van Gene, our race analyst, carter extraordinaire, organizer of Covcart and attendee to several Missed Apex karting events when you don't have a much more important barbecue to go to. But you are going to be there on September the 21st. The last one was April 20th. So you had a fantastic battle with Kyle Power, just swapping paint, swapping rubber. It was really great to watch. You can find that on our YouTube channel. And if you go to mistapex.com/karting, you can both find their battle in Heat 5 and you can come and join us. I think there's like 4 spots left, Jeansy. So we're filling up already and we've got good attendance from the Mist Apex crew, including Trumpets.
Ooh, I'm looking forward to actually meeting Trumpets. Having spoken to him for the best part of 3 years online, I've still never touched the man. So looking forward to a bear hug. See if he's an awkward hugger or a decent hugger.
He's taller than you'd think. So for me, you know, it's a stand on a box and hug. easily, because I've touched all of you now. I've touched all of you, apart from Steve, who's far too far away in Australia. But the worst hugger in the Mist Apex crew, without a doubt, is Bradley Philpott.
Oh, without a doubt. It's like hugging a robot. It's ridiculous.
It's like he doesn't understand when the hug has started. He just thinks you're very, very close to him. And then when he does compute the hug, it's all too late. And then he tries to engage. And it's just horrible. I've tried 3 times and it's just not happening.
I'd love to see a hug between him and Sheldon Cooper.
Yeah, I think they would just slowly walk into each other, realize that they can't go any further in that direction and then back away. But you will be able to race against Bradley Philpott, Alex Van Gene, Carl Power, Chris Stevens will be on commentary. I'll be there. Matt Trumpets will be there. So come and join us at Buckmore Park on September the 21st. And maybe you'll see a battle as good as the Leclerc-Verstappen battle. It was just excellent. This, combined with Austria, is just an F1 treat. I'm so happy with what I saw on screen.
The gloves are firmly off, weren't they? Leclerc now knows the rules. I think that was his exact words. And he did the exact same thing to Max that Max did to him, which I absolutely loved. I mean, I actually can't talk about every single incident because there was 17,000 of them and they were all amazing. And the maturity and this level of skill between those two drivers had me on the edge of my seat for the majority of that race. It was an absolute pleasure to watch. If we'd watched that in GP2, there'd have been bits everywhere. Or Sebastian Vettel. We'll get to that later. I haven't seen a masterclass like that between two drivers for the length of the race. I actually think ever. Everyone talks about that Gilles Villeneuve Dijon race where he was against someone else whose name is slipping my mind. The chat room will very quickly tell me. And everyone talks about that as one of the best battles in history. I think this was better. That's how much respect I have for those two young men. And they are the future of this sport. And it was absolutely phenomenal to watch.
Now, I think Leclerc was at a slight disadvantage, Steve, in the incident in Austria, because I think Leclerc was driving to a different set of rules and that situation no longer exists.
No, he's figured out now exactly what the rules are the rules between him and Max. And so, you know, bring the gladiators on and let them go. They both raced tough and hard, pretty fairly, you know, they pushed it to the limits, but those two guys are going to give all of us amazing amounts of entertainment in the next 10 years, so long as they don't do, you know, push so hard that they do some damage to themselves in some nasty way, and God forbid that. But they are great racers, they are young, and, you know, they had me pumping the air last night during their battle. It was brilliant.
Quietly, because you didn't want to wake up Jane. Jeansy.
Yeah.
And then chuck in Norris and Russell in competitive cars, and that'll be amazing. I think Sainz as well. I really rate Sainz. I think Sainz is really good. And Daniel Ricciardo, once that Renault starts working, I just think the future of this sport, the moment, for the talent that we have got coming through, once Vettel disappears and Lewis has won everything that can possibly be won, I think the core that we're going to be left with is something so impressive. I think we've got the strongest grid we've ever seen in F1. And it is absolutely amazing. And that's why I love it at the moment. You can have a couple of dull races, but then you get the last two. It's just incredible.
We could call this race and the last race kind of preview F1 2021, couldn't we? Because there was a little glimpse of Lando Norris versus Ricciardo as well at the beginning. And I think that battle might start heating up because that midfield best of the rest battle is kind of now firmly between Norris, Sainz and Hülkenberg, Ricciardo, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it is. excuse me, that middle battle now is settling down. Now that McLaren have found a little bit of magical pace, you know, during this last couple of months, they're really bringing it to Renault. I think Renault actually caught with their pants down a bit. I don't think they quite know what the next step is. I keep, you know, following, you know, their PR and stuff, and I'm not hearing anything that's positive saying we know where the issue is, mm-hmm. we know exactly what we have to do to fix it. There always seems to be a little bit of, well, we're trying this and we're trying that. We're not sure. Maybe we'll find it this week. They need to be much, much more on the ball.
All right, look, Mirror 33, we're being accused of bias left, right and centre here, Alex, calling you out here and saying slight British bias here. Really? On a British podcast? Unbelievable. Slight British bias here. Russell and
Norris. What a surprise.
Russell and Norris are not in the same class as Leclerc and Verstappen. I'll go first and say they're just a little bit behind on the conveyor belt, but Norris certainly is showing that he's right up there and he's in his 10th race.
The word is yet.
Yeah.
Russell hasn't, I feel for Russell.
He hasn't had a chance.
Because he hasn't had a chance this year, but he beat Norris last year and Norris is rookie of the year by a mile.
Absolutely.
This year. And I just really like Norris though. I think there's more of a huge, I'm a big Danny Ric fan and I think Danny Ric is such an awesome guy, but Norris is just hilarious. I mean, even when you watched him bin it with Johnny Herbert in the McLaren during the yes. pre-show, he's just so humble and just finds everything funny. And I'm not going to mention the conversation in the press conference, but I really like Norris just because I think he's a lad, real, real lad.
Yeah, no, certainly very likeable. But it's absolutely fair to say that Verstappen and Leclerc are much more the finished article. And Verstappen, I would say, more than Leclerc as well. Verstappen is the class of the field up there with Lewis Hamilton this season, for sure. However, let's get back to the battle of the race that he had with Leclerc. The comment of the race on team radio, 100%, was Max Verstappen saying, oh, I've spotted a kettle in the distance and you won't believe this, guys, but it is black. Unbelievable. Unbelievable radio comment to talk about Leclerc moving late.
But what that proves is all the drivers do it. It's not trying to get someone in trouble. It's what instantly runs through your head the second something happens. And that's it's just frustration coming. I get really annoyed when people get annoyed with drivers' radio comments, because unless they are particularly directed in a particular way, like it's a GP2 engine, that kind of stuff, where there's nothing involved. But when you've had someone in a battle and they just spew something over the radio, it's a vent.
Yeah.
They're letting go. And it annoys me when anyone gets criticism really for banging on the radio.
Okay, but Verstappen has had a significant advantage in F1 because, frankly, he's come in and he's torn up the rule book on what you can and can't do in racing, much the same way that Lewis Hamilton came in and overtook in places where people weren't expecting it and was very aggressive in the overtakes. Max Verstappen has kind of shown a new way of defending, and they had to jiggle and change the rule book around that. And it's the same way that Michael Schumacher came in and said, hey guys, you know what? If you work out and get fit, it's a lot easier to drive these beasts. And he changed it. So Michael Schumacher came in and he was physically superior to the rest of the F1 field. But 5-10 years after that, everyone's Michael Schumacher. Lewis Hamilton came in and started overtaking in places that you couldn't overtake. But now everyone is Lewis Hamilton and knows that and caught him up. Is this the time now, Gene Z? Are we going to see Max Verstappen's defending and racing in that way, kind of that advantage go? Some of the older guard are still looking at Max Verstappen and going, hey, I think, you know, that's not the way it's done. We won't do that. We won't necessarily change. But the kids coming up in F2, F3, Max Verstappen's a hero. And they're all going to be racing like that. Verstappen has changed the landscape of the very fabric of Formula One racing.
I agree. You watch. Kimi Raikkonen versus Lewis is actually a really good example. We saw so many races between those two and they just leave each other the room. They weren't rude with each other and it was very
gentlemanly racer. And then Max has come in and gone, no, I'm showing you the outside of the circuit, whether you like it or not. And some have adapted, others haven't, Sebastian Vettel. And I think, but I make a joke, but I think Seb is trying to do that. I think Seb is very much trying to fight back to the youngsters and is getting caught out. But you watch F2. They're ruthless with each other. And that's where it's come from. Max came straight out of F3. No, he was in Euro Formula 3000, wasn't he? And that's what they do. That's the way racing is now. If I see it in karting, you see young karters and they really, really are aggressive with each other. And I don't think that's been in Formula One, really. You see the odd chop. You used to have the old Schumacher chop. But the way these guys race, and generally without hitting each other, it's a new style. And it's something that's really pushing the boundaries of the limits of the cars and the ability of the drivers.
Now, Aussie Steve, you're 900 years old, and now are you looking at how Verstappen races and go, well, that's just not how it's done?
A little, but then you've got to look back at what happened in the late 80s and early 90s. Prost, Senna, and a bunch of others in those days were pretty ruthless in their racing too. I don't think that it's something that Formula One hasn't seen. Nigel Mansell was never terribly gentlemanly on the track. He was a bit of a ruthless bugger at times. My one question is, it's a dangerous sport. There has to be some respect shown between drivers when they're racing, because no one wants to put another driver in the situation where he's running at 200 miles an hour into, a close wall. You don't want to damage each other. So there needs to be a little bit of understanding that, yeah, we'll race hard and we'll race, we fight each other to the death, but we've got to be aware of overstepping the mark and putting people into unnecessary danger. And I'm a big believer in let's go fight hard, but there's got to be a little line. Now, do these new guys understand that little line? And we're allowed to race right up to the line. But you've got to be aware that, just that one little decision, that throws you over the line could be seriously damaging to someone.
Okay, well, I don't think we're there yet. It's a very good thing to look out for as we see more and more of these young guns coming through, the style of racing changing. And I think it's the style of racing everyone wants to see. So, Jeansy, I know you're taking note of some chat room comments there. The chat room has been incredibly busy today. You can come and join in the live stream by going to YouTube and searching for Missed Apex Podcast. Subscribe to us there. When we go live, normally at around 8 p.m. when we can, you can just join the chat room and we can see what you're saying. Also, whilst I'm waiting for Jeansy to scribble stuff down as well, can I say a massive thank you to our patrons who keep the lights on at Missed Apex Podcast. Twice we've had to make big decisions about what we do with Missed Apex Podcast, and twice, because of the support of patrons at patreon.com/missedapex, we've been able to continue. Not just continue, but grow. The Austrian review had 28,000 people tune into it. That is incredibly humbling. That is something I try not to think about directly. Something I try not to tell Jeansy because he'll be too scared. But the reason we've been able to grow and survive is because of you guys. If you're a patron, you'll come and join us in our private Slack forum, which is a pretty cool place to hang out during the race. In fact, it's the only place I hang out online during the race. You'll be the first to know about any events. You'll get a patron podcast with me and Matt, which we don't hold back any content. We just, it's a bit more personal. In the last Patreon podcast, we meant to talk about F1. We never got to it, and I just had to click stop after 40 minutes. So if you want to know more about me and Matt, that's a good place to stop by. Patreon.com/MissedApex. Oh, and you'll also get an ad-free feed to add to your RSS player, to your podcast player. So, ads or Patreon support. It's a decent choice, Jeansy.
Indeed, sounds good. By the way, that was world-class padding. Yeah. You should have your own radio show.
I should be a professional radio presenter, shouldn't I?
You really should. That was fantastic. I was very, very impressed while I was scribbling something down that I won't be able to read later.
Okay, so look, this is the kind of racing we want to see. The last thing I really want to end on in the Max Verstappen thing is the actual rules of racing now going forward, because there is now no way. We started the season. No, I'm just saying we started the season. You don't want to talk about the rules. We started the season thinking that you couldn't run a car off because the rules said you can't deliberately crowd a car off. And Verstappen got, not Verstappen, Vettel got a penalty for exactly that, for crowding Hamilton over the line, not the wall, on the Canadian Grand Prix. They couldn't have done it. They could not have given Verstappen a penalty. Politically, I completely agree. No way they could have given Verstappen a penalty for getting past Leclerc and winning the race, especially in front of those Dutch fans. I don't agree with how the rule was enforced. I agree it's better for the sport. Leclerc has just gone, hey, I tell you what, I know you can do that now. And I was waiting all race for that maneuver. But Jeansy, not only did he show him off the track, because Verstappen in the corner before actually tried to close the door on the apex. They touched wheels, no harm done. When they got to the exit, Leclerc showed him to the edge of the line. He went beyond the line, and Leclerc himself went four wheels off the track to like really hit home. No. I am definitely doing what you did to me in Austria, and the world is watching, and there's absolutely no way whatever I do here, I can get a penalty. He was in an immune state. He was invulnerable, and it was fantastic. I could just see him just flipping like mental birds left, right and center to the whole of F1. I loved it.
Oh, it was fabulous. Absolutely fabulous to watch. I wouldn't have done any different. I wouldn't have done any different in Austria. I probably wouldn't. No, I'm not going to get into Canada. I haven't got time to get into Canada. But no, I would have done exactly the same. I think it's hard but fair. Max didn't have to go off the circuit. Max could have backed out in Austria. Leclerc didn't have to go off the circuit. He could have backed out. So as far as I'm concerned, all is fair in love and war. Those kind of things are what we want to see. It's on the limit. Believe me, it's on the limit. But it was just good, hard racing.
Oh, okay, the chat room's arguing. Oh, there was two wheels barely on. It showed on the replay. Okay, he was pretty much all the way off. What I'm saying is, there definitely wasn't racing room, Steve.
Let's hope that they keep fighting each other. And the fact that Charles has, after being sort of given the short shrift in Austria, has turned around and in his brain a switch has flicked and he said, okay, if that is how we're going to race, because he and Max are going to be banging each other's wheels for a long time to come. So it seems to me that Austria was the point at which he said, okay, we now know exactly how you and I are going to race, Max, and watch out for it. And he came out this week and that was it. You know, he's not going to give an inch. And that's fair too. There was nothing in any of those moves that they did that warranted any kind of, retribution.
Well, not anymore. Not anymore, because the precedence has been set. Jeansy, you make your point, and then we're going to play a game.
There's a lot of comments going on in the chat about, well, Max passed off the circuit. There is no way Max would have wanted to be out there. It is a longer route, and it's a dirty route. It was risky being out there, and he managed to make it work. It's a little bit different to cutting the corner, stopping someone from making their progress. So Max didn't actually stop Leclerc making any progress. So that's why I think there was nothing for it, which is a case of, well, he doesn't want to be out there. It would have been slower, but Leclerc actually gave him the room to come back on the circuit after ushering him off of it.
All right. I think it's time to play a game.
Whose fault is it?
Now, a lot of people like to look at things and go, oh, that's a bit of a racing incident. But we never have no-blame scenarios, Gene Z. I don't like them. I'm not used to them. It's not the way things operate in my house. My wife, Mrs. Spanners, she is a beautiful woman. She's talented as well. She has many qualities, but she's difficult and she's mean. And when things go wrong, she has to assign blame. And that's the life I've lived for the last 13 years. And I'm going to take it out on all of you lot listening. So when there's an incident, we like to examine the racing rules and talk about whose fault is it. And the first one, I think, is pretty clear cut. I don't think we're going to have too much argument. I don't think even the Reds in the chat room are going to have any argument here. Mind you, let's see. However, it does let us talk about some other topics. So the first scenario that we're in is Vettel and Max Verstappen. Max Verstappen actually stays ahead of Vettel, arguably, by leaving the track, do you not think? Jeansy's not concerned about that, and he's a big proponent of track limits. But when we get down into the braking zone at Club, Verstappen is covering off the corner. He's very much covering off the inside, slight jinx aside. Sebastian Vettel careers into the back of him. Max Verstappen does then have four wheels off the track, but vertically. So the stewards are looking at that. But it's a shocker, Jeansy. Let's be completely honest. Vettel's had an absolute shocker there. He's completely misjudged it. He's gone for a gap which was never on. He's broken too late. He's lost control and he's just ruined his and Verstappen's race.
Right. There's actually no defense for Seb, because what he's actually done, and I've done it, I know lots of people who've done it, it's a very easy thing to do. When you're in the heat of battle, especially when you have just been overtaken, it's really easy to think, oh, I'm getting you straight back at the next corner. I mean, that's always my thought, is if I've been done, I am getting it back at the next corner. And the way Seb locked up, he was never alongside, so Max could use as much of the circuit as he wanted to. He never went back to the racing line. They were as far away from the racing line as they possibly could be. So you can't accuse anyone of moving more than once. He kept moving. He's missed his breaking point. That's why he's locked up like he has. He's missed his breaking point. And then as he's gone to jink to get out of the way, he's lost all the downforce from his front wing. Wheels have locked and he's careered into the back of Max. And how Max's car wasn't utterly destroyed from that impact, I have no idea. The fact that he dragged it back round and still finished, I actually can't remember where Max finished now, but there's no reprieve from Seb for that. And he admitted it, because the first thing he did was went to Max and apologised.
Now, what's even more remarkable is the area of the car that was hit was the area of the car that the Red Bull mechanics were working on the pit lane just before the start of the race. And were, no, you don't think so, Jeansy?
No, it was a rear wing end fence is what they changed.
Yeah,
they changed one rear wing end fence. So okay. he hit the diffuser. I mean, he went underneath his car. He's hit the diffuser, and the diffuser does all the work.
Okay, but the rear wing will have had to have withstood that impact. So I'm going to say, well done to the Red Bull mechanics, Steve. I ignore this clown.
Well, I think the commentators were saying that there was stuff hanging off underneath the Max's car after that collision, and I'm not surprised about that. You know, the diffuser took a huge whack, and there's no doubt that it was Seb's fault. He had a brain fade and ran into the back of him. And Max must be wondering what the hell it is. I mean, Danny Rick did it to him not long ago. So
yeah, in Baku as well. Oh,
yeah.
Merkman in the chat room. I'm going to have to give you some props for that. Diffuser, I don't even know her. Yeah, that made me giggle.
I like boom, that. Boom.
Yeah, but also like the chat room pointing out that it did have to hit the curb as well. It had to withstand that. So the car did well to survive. I think he would have lost some aero, some pace, but both cars were able to continue. Now, I'm going to try and give a slight defence to Sebastian Vettel. Just a very, very slight defence. Oh, Jeansy's looking at me. The slight defence I'd make, and Vettel's instinct immediately was to say, oh, he moved twice. So I think there's a couple of things to break down first, because people are getting confused with the crowding rule and the moving twice rule. So very quickly, have patience. The move twice rule, which I think has actually been removed, was that on a straight before the braking zone, you could move once to defend. Typically, that's to the inside to defend. And you could go all the way to the edge of the track there. It didn't matter. You know, we're not talking about when the car's alongside. If the car's alongside, you always have to leave room. But you could defend and you could close all the way to the inside. If you then went back, that's the second move you're allowed. You can't make two moves, but you can move back to the racing line. And if you move back to the racing line, you then must, in all circumstances, leave a car's width. So basically all that's saying is, when you're coming down to the straight to the corner, you can choose to defend the inside. But if you do that, you can't then go back to the outside all the way. You can go back to the outside to help you get a better line into the corner, but you can't go outside all the way to shut them off. That's two moves. That's weaving. The other move is crowding, which is that basically if there's a car alongside you at any point, be it a corner or a straight, you can't then drive off the track to then force the driver off track. And that's the rule that we now know doesn't apply on the exits of corners, but it did apply in Canada. am I doing this okay? Have I summarized this okay, Jeansy?
Yeah, it's a contentious one. I'm sorry. There's no defense for Seb in this one.
No. Okay, I didn't get to the defense. The
moving twice thing, I understand. The crowding thing, I understand. I always thought the crowding thing was never applied on the exit of corners, because then what's overtaking? But you know, it's gaining your advantage by showing somebody the edge of the circuit. I put somebody in a tire barrier doing that because she decided to hang around the outside of me. She shouldn't have done it. She wouldn't end up in the wall. Simple as that.
Okay, but in this case, the only slight defense is that Vettel is looking at Verstappen coming and closing in the outside. Now, Vettel's got two choices. He either then jinks right to try and go down the outside, which was never going to work in club, or he waits until Verstappen thinks he's won the corner and then goes back to the outside to give himself a little bit more of an angle into the apex. Because obviously, if you defend all the way in, like that, you're compromising yourself massively out of club. I think Max took a slight jink back out to the line, and then Vettel saw that as a cue that maybe Max was moving over a little bit more, and he was going for the dive bomb down the middle. Verstappen did no such thing. He did not continue. It was a very slight turn, and there was never room. That's my slight defense. That's the mindset I think Vettel was going for.
What Vettel, I feel, should have done, and what I probably would have done knowing the layout of that circuit, was you keep Max pinned to that inside apex. So it compromises him all the way through the left, right, right. Once you've done that, you've then got a great run heading out onto the pit straight. Then you can line him up to get him at turn three. That's what I should have done, which I saw. Who did that in the race? Someone did do that in the race and got a great move in turn three, doing pretty much exactly that. That's what Seb should have done. There was no way he was getting past Max there. He needs to wise up if he thinks he was going to somehow overtake Max into that corner, because it was just never going to happen. Never going to happen. He wasn't close enough.
All right. This is the difficult bit, and I think this is where we will end our Formula 1 before we go on to Formula B and the podium. Jake Sanson was meant to be on today, and he couldn't make it, unfortunately, for a technical reason. However, I would like to congratulate Jake Sanson for an absolutely epic achievement, which, I mean, he is annoying, frustrating, loud. He drives me insane at times. But we've done a lot of commentary together. We've worked together. We've done podcasts like 4 years ago to 10 people. Jake Sanson, though, when it comes to the mic and the racy car bits, no doubt at all, he's just incredible. He brings a race to life. He brings karting events to life that are amateur, low level, but you would think that that was Macau. You would think it was Le Mans. He's fantastic. And it was so, so good to hear him appear on the Formula 2 and Formula 3 comms. Did you catch him, Jeansy? On Sky TV, like a legit proper commentator.
You lot had been banging on in the chat about something secret that Jake was going to do, and you weren't letting on to it. And then all of a sudden, I'm sat there watching F3 qualifying, and all of a sudden, I'm like, that's Jake Sanson. And then I get on the thing, and you guys are like, yeah, we knew that. It's like, you didn't tell me.
The thing is, though, that is proper big time.
I've always said, I need solid facts. You can't give me rough vague clues.
I'm sorry. And he does have terrible hats. That's absolutely correct, European. Go on.
I was just going to say, well done, Jake. You're an absolute superstar, and well, proud to have you as part of our team as well, because that's great.
Yeah, and when I tuned in, it's the difference between somebody who's like, yeah, they're really good in like League One, but you go, oh, they're getting their shot in the Premiership, which that's what it is, Sky commentary on an F1 weekend at Silverstone with the FIA. I just kind of assumed that he wouldn't quite nail it, or there'd be a bedding in period. He did. He absolutely nailed it. But anyway, it might be a blessing in disguise, because he's very, very vocal in his criticism of Sebastian Vettel, and has been for a long time, as have we been, Jeansy. But I have not been sitting here calling for his head. However, on this occasion, and you can clip this bit out here, you can clip this bit out, Steve, if you like, for a promo, I would now think that as a Ferrari fan, if you are a true Ferrari fan, you're Tifosi and not a Vettel fan, I would be now saying to Sebastian Vettel, thank you very much for your effort. We see what you've done. You are a great racer. You are a great champion. We definitely wanted you here and you've given your heart and soul. But you are now a liability to our team and you have been for a while and we wanted to give you every chance and we have given you every chance. We've given you our support. We've given you our love. But it's now time for you to move on and we wish you the best in all your future endeavours. I think Gene D, Channel 4 wrote the obituary for Vettel. I'm not going to be quite as harsh as they were absolutely savage. But I think I agree that if I was a Ferrari fan now, I would now be hoping Vettel is leaving at the end of this season.
See, now, I don't like dumping on any driver because I have my favourites, but I want everyone to perform well. It's like the tennis, watching Djokovic versus Federer just before. They're two phenomenal players and I just want to see them perform at their best because when the drivers perform at their best, we get the best show. And that's what I want. I just want to see the best racing. And I don't know what's got into Seb's head the last couple of seasons, but I mean, the guy's blistering. And if he's on pole and gets that first corner first, you're not really going to beat him because he's the best at that. But put him in racing situations at the moment and it just goes away. And it's really frustrating because the guy is lightning, but the consistency's gone. And Ferrari needs someone who can guide them to a championship. And I don't think Seb can do that anymore. And it hurts to say that because he's a great character to have around.
Steve, chat room very split, very emotional on that. And I do apologise. I didn't want to stick the knife in. It's just that we've been seeing this time and time again. And it's particularly since Germany last year, you might argue. He's not a young guy. He's where you should be in your prime. And time after time, it's not happening. That's not to say he's a great driver, but it's just we've just reached kind of the end of the line, haven't we?
I don't know whether we've reached the end of the line yet. He is at the point where he should be in his prime. The problem is that marker for prime is being dropped down every year. You know, whereas once prime was, you know, a driver was in their prime when they were 26 or 27 or 28. Now a driver, if you ask Max, a driver is in their prime when they're 21 or 22. So I suppose it's hard for him to, compete against that. He still has it. He's still a brilliant racer. There is no doubt about that. I don't think that he has a lot of confidence looking at him. I don't think that he has a lot of confidence in Ferrari. I think that's part of the problem. He has lost confidence with the team for whatever reason, and he doesn't know how to go about switching them on again.
I think the problem with Seb was he had a point where him and Lewis were on a level playing field. And I think they were very, very close to each other in form of talent. And I think they were above everybody else. And Lewis has continued on that trajectory. You know, it's like when you play Pez on the PlayStation and you see the trajectory of players and some guys' potentials are higher than others. And I just think Seb hit his potential and has plateaued. I think guys like Lewis, I mean, you say that Max has hit his potential. I think the scary thing is I think Max is nowhere near his potential. That's the scariest thing about Max. Same thing with Leclerc, same thing with Norris. They're nowhere near their potential.
Quick comeback, Steve.
I think you're right, Alex. Max has still got a way to go and Charles Leclerc and Norris both have got, plenty of time to, hit their potential. You're right. I don't know what it is with Seb. I mean, he still has the ability to race hard. Whatever the issue is, I think it's psychological. And maybe it's Lewis got under his brain and, made him doubt himself. Maybe it's the fact, maybe it's the fact of having Lewis being so dominant and now having Charles Leclerc on the same team, sniffing up him every week that has just, put him on edge and he's now beginning to doubt himself. And I'm sure it's mental.
Den Hanak says, why are we being negative about drivers after a great race? We've been really, really positive about Bottas's defending, Lewis Hamilton's pace, Verstappen and Leclerc's driving. We've even been positive about Gasly. But your man Sebastian Vettel has just punted into the back of Verstappen and it's not a one-off. It's not rare. at the moment. So I think it's perfectly fair to really look at his form and say, is he going to be at Ferrari much longer beyond this season? I don't think so. I think that time has run out. There's a lot of rumours about him going elsewhere. And I think we should keep an eye on those rumours. I think that's all we've got to say about that, Alex. And I appreciate that people are going to be upset at me/us, but I was very positive a few races back when Vettel made a similar mistake. I think it was after Bahrain. And I said, you have to remember that the reason he's making these mistakes is because he is pushing so hard and because he's got heart and because he really wants it. So I know that in Formula One, he's going to be remembered as one of the greats who won 4 world championships in a row. His rivalry with Lewis Hamilton will go down in history as one of the great F1 rivalries. So we're not doing him down. We're just being honest about the point that we're at, I think, right now. And from a where does he go next point of view, that's something we can talk about in the summer. But I'm going to say to you, he's got one big paycheck left. So he can leave Ferrari with his head still held high at the end of this season. And he can go to Renault on a what he can say is a revitalizing mission for £40 million a year. Or he can go back to Red Bull for another big paycheck and valiantly fight and pick up the odd win next season in Mexico, Singapore, Austria, or Monaco.
Without sounding quite negative, if he gets beaten by Leclerc, then leaves, I don't think he leaves with his head held high.
You don't think so? Well, in the chat room, somebody said, oh, you're being stupid. He's beating Leclerc. Well, I mean, now Leclerc's up to speed. I think the smart money's on Leclerc. Has he been beaten 3 times in a row? Is that Alex? The
last No. He's now 3 points behind.
Oh.
Seb's now 3 points ahead.
Yeah.
It was 20 odd.
Right. So the smart money now would probably be on Leclerc beating Vettel over the season. Although, another quick caveat, I will say that if you're not fighting for the title, you don't always get a fair... It's not always fair to go, well, that driver got more points and finished 5th and he beat someone who finished 7th. Because I think if you're not fighting for the title, you'll make different decisions. You might race differently. Your team might take different approaches, give one person one wing, another person another wing, that kind of thing.
Do we think that in some of the races at the beginning of this season, Ferrari definitely favoured Seb and gave him the better strategy?
Yeah.
Australia. I don't want to be down on Seb. But the last 3 seasons, he's not covered himself in glory. He should have won 17, could have won 18.
We'll definitely do our League of Justice in the summer break, and I'll warn everyone so the people who don't like what ifs can tune out. Guys, thank you so much for keeping me company, Alex and Steve Amy. Steve Amy does absolute wonders. If you watch the YouTube video, he's the man who gives me this studio. He's the man who clips out all our promos and gets rid of my embarrassing gaffes. Like when I accidentally flicked to my green screen thing. People were saying that proves that I'm actually in a shower. I'm not. I'm in a shed. It's a real shed. I will do, because I have time now, I will do a video tour of the shed as well. But yeah, Steve Amy is the man who makes all the video stuff happen. Thank you very much to Alex Van Gien. Alex can be found by searching for Alex Van Gien, because he's the only person who's called that. It's not a real name.
Just on a, whose fault is this?
Yeah.
Going back a little bit.
Vettel's.
We missed out the Haases.
Okay. I tell you what, we'll quickly cover Formula B now and the Haases. Formula B, the things I really want to say, I think we kind of covered Lando versus Ricciardo being fantastic. Lando Norris got completely messed up on the strategy. Very, very unlucky. Great for Sainz. The resurgence of McLaren is really exciting. I'm really enjoying watching that Formula B. One thing I want to say, I'll say that on the podium about the best fans. The Haases hitting each other. Okay, so we haven't gone too deep into the whole Rich Energy debacle, which is just insane.
I don't want to go into the Rich Energy thing because it gives them promotions. I'm really glad it wasn't talked about in any of the shows that I've watched, because you're talking about that company and it just gives them free promo and they don't deserve it.
I don't mind if they make a little bit more money because we get to laugh at their expense, at their very laughable things. Fine. That's just the price of doing business.
How do they make money? There's no product out there.
For I don't know. I don't know how this works. I don't know how maybe that it helps them move money from one place to another or something. I
think that when all of this falls out, we need to have a special program and, you know, devote a full hour and a half into delving into what the hell happened.
Alex, have you seen that Twitter account at Poor Energy where they do the polite and corporate version of what Rich Energy should have said?
It's comedy genius, and whoever came up with it is an absolute mastermind.
He's an absolute handsome mastermind, I hear you say.
I didn't say handsome. He's probably really ugly and hides in a shed.
So how do we see that battle? Now, I'm torn. On my first viewing, I thought Magnussen's been right cheeky there and shoved it into a closing wedge. However, I think that actually by the time Grosjean is driving off track, Magnussen's already there. So I'm going to say it's Grosjean's fault. Magnussen was on the outside.
Magnussen was on the outside.
Yeah.
Pretty certain of it. Magnussen on the outside. I have written down in my notes, Haas hit each other, Grosjean's fault.
Oh, right. You think Grosjean's fault as well?
Yeah. Okay. Grosjean is literally just shut. Grosjean could had so much opportunity to give extra room to K-Mag. K-Mag would be on the outside with his teammate on the inside of him thinking, it's okay. He's my teammate. He'll give me some room. And he didn't hit them. And they're both out of the race. If Grosjean has another drive next year, I'll be flabbergasted because the guy
if he has another
one. He's done.
If he has another drive next year, it won't be with Haas. That's for sure.
You think they've run out of patience?
I mean, I can't believe with the things that Steiner said about Grosjean in the documentary on camera that he's actually got another drive. So
I think it was just a matter of they didn't have anybody else. I'm sure.
Who wouldn't want that seat? There's so many other decent drivers out there they could put in that seat. But I mean, the less we say about it, I mean, Haas are worse than Williams at the moment. And that's saying something. Haas are terrible at the moment. And it kills me because I love that team.
Wait a minute. What, Williams? Worse, you're using Williams as the low benchmark?
Williams beat a Ferrari today.
The team that finished 14th today in the British Grand Prix. Is that what you're telling me? Yeah, they beat Vettel. Sure,
they beat Ferrari. On pace, surely.
Well, they beat Vettel by merit of did either Williams car drive into the back of a Red Bull? No. So I would say that it's not points. I mean, there was someone in our Slack group. Was it Mitch? It might have been Mitch, who right from the beginning of the day was saying, I think there's a cheeky special Williams points on the cards here. And I nearly put a little flutter on it. I didn't. But as the Haas has dropped out, you go, oh, hang on a minute. And then, and then Perez goes and drives into the side of Hülkenberg. By the way, we skipped over that. Perez's fault, although he said he had a steering issue, which meant he couldn't change the differential, which meant that he steered into Hülkenberg. But definitely Perez's fault. It was starting to look like...
I missed that.
Yeah. Perez, in the restart, Perez just basically didn't turn at the end of Wellington Straight. You're on mute. You're on mute. I'm sure what you're saying is fascinating, but you're on mute.
I saw bits hanging off of cars and they never showed a replay of it. So yeah. I never got to see it again.
I just remember everything so I can roll it back in my mind. But yeah, Williams 14th. I think he was, Russell was about 15 seconds ahead of Robert Kubica. So yeah, there you go. That probably constitutes a decent day for Williams. Be nice if they qualified a bit higher. And Matthew Carnes had some very, very interesting things to say about Williams and where they might go from here, and some interesting comments on Robert Kubica's form, actually. So those of you who want to hear a bit of a defense of Robert Kubica, tune into our Carter episode from Tuesday.
There was a thing on Sky with the two Williams drivers, one of their engineers and Martin Brundle going stock car racing, and Kubica got beaten by the engineer and crashed on his own.
I'm sure it was unlucky.
And I love Kubica, and I wanted him to do well this year, but sorry, dude.
Well, let's see. If he can hang on in, and I'm talking hang on in with funding here, and survive George Russell, stay in touch, and George Russell move on to bigger and better things, who knows? You put a Sorokin in that Williams car next season, or a Latifi, and then let's see. If he can just do enough to buy the seat for next season as well, then we might see a different story. I'm not quite giving up on him yet. I'm not quite giving up on him yet. But anyway, yeah, that was Whose Fault Is It? I think we were still technically playing Whose Fault Is It for the whole of the second half of the show there. I think we'd better move on to the podium.
Whose
thanks for tuning in to the British Grand Prix review from Missed Apex Podcast. You're the best listeners. You're the best listeners ever. Now, Lewis Hamilton is accused of saying best fans at every race he goes to. And this started, I think this started properly at the beginning of last season. And I never caught it. I was going, did he? And then I saw Silverstone and he was going, these are the best fans in the world. I love them. They're great. And people were going, oh no, he says that all the time. And then at Monza, I listened carefully and he said, these are great fans. So I can't say anything before Silverstone last year, but I've been looking out for this for a year, Jeansy, because that's how petty I am. And he has never once, unless anyone can prove me wrong with a clip, he's never once said best fans at another Grand Prix. He always goes out of his way to compliment the crowd and go, look at this crowd. They're amazing. They've really lifted me. They're brilliant here. But he's only said best fans at Silverstone, which he did after qualifying on Saturday.
I'm not going to say that he has said best anywhere else because I don't know and I'm not going to say that. However, it's very much like in WWE when they're doing a promo and they go, and we're here in Wisconsin and the whole place goes mad. That's what it's all about. It's just, it's a bit of showmanship. They're just getting the crowd on side. But he does do it. And I understand why it can irk the people who don't like him. I understand why it irks them. It just makes me laugh.
It's filler. You know, it's filler. They say, Lewis, what did you think of the race? And he's just got it in his head. And sometimes it's just you're forming the thought, thanks for the team back at the factory. Because you know if he doesn't say thanks to the team back at the factory, people will go, ah, there he is taking credit. It's all about the team. So he makes sure he does all that. And then he'll say, let's acknowledge the crowd because they're in front of him. And like you said, it's like a rock and roll thing. You know, it's like the rock stars who are like, oh, this is the best crowd here in. And then looks at the paper, Colchester, woo! Yeah, and they don't really know where they are. So it is a bit of filler and it's a bit of corporate speak. But anyway, I digress. Anyway, we do awards here at Missed Apex Podcast. We do Thing of the Weekend. We do Miss the Apex and we give out a Pony Award. Steve, if you could keep a beady eye on the chat room for me and see who they're giving the awards to. Alex Van Gene, at Alex Van Gene on Twitter. Prolific Facebook poster. Social media influencer. No, you're none of those things. But you are a darn good Carter and you're our race analyst. Who was your thing of the weekend?
I'm not going to be predictable and go for hashtag 44, hashtag blessed. I'm going to go for the other thing I'm really predictable for, which is Lando Norris. literally everything he's done this weekend has been gold. He's been brilliant. I'm going to change that at the very last minute. No. It kind of is Lewis Hamilton, but it was Lewis Hamilton taking Frank Williams around the track in a Merc, which was not only amazing, they were supposed to do one lap, got to the end of the lap, and Frank went, nah, just keep going. And they just drove through, because who's going to tell Lewis Hamilton and Frank Williams off? And they went off again.
I know.
It was absolutely brilliant. Such a moment watching the elation on a very sick, looking Frank Williams. He doesn't look well the way we're used to seeing him, and I know we only see him once a year and I really hope he is fine, but he didn't look particularly well from my point of view. But the elation on his face of going around that track and really enjoying the speed, and Lewis kind of pushing a bit harder and a bit harder and a bit harder, and Frank asking about the brakes, if they're fading or not. It was just such a wonderful moment.
There was corporate stuff aside, because obviously Mercedes has edited that video together and, you know, they're going, the brakes have kind of gone. And you might want to edit that out if you were precious, but they did talk about them being powerful. And then Frank Williams is there saying, you know, the brakes are okay now, are they? And Lewis Hamilton goes, nope. You know, and he carries on going. But yeah, it was actually, they got to the end of the lap and he said, you know, are you done now? Or do you want to go again? And Frank Williams was just like, yeah, no, I do want to go again. And it was great. You could see people trying to wave them down. And you go, yeah, I guess you're Lewis Hamilton. You can go and do another one. It really was a fantastic and lovely video. And we give Claire Williams some stick, but she was funny in it as well. And you could see it was touching. And you could see that she was genuinely kind of concerned as well.
I'm just a bit unsure why Frank Williams wasn't taken round by one of his drivers.
Oh, yeah, I know, I heard that, but I think Williams don't have a road car, so I'm imagining it's Mercedes just going, hey, we've got a car, a driver, and we're doing these ride-alongs please, will you come with
us? Ambassador for the business kind of thing, rather than having someone else drive a Mercedes. Fair enough.
But you're right. It might have looked better with George Russell in there. You can have Lando Norris as well, if you want. Because although he didn't do particularly well in the race, not all down to his fault. The social media stuff is brilliant. He is bringing Formula One to life along with others. And his interactions with Carlos Sainz are brilliant. The fact that Carlos Sainz isn't as funny as Lando Norris, but is being dragged along. And you can see Lando's face because Sainz is saying things like, oh, okay, this is where now we do the bantering. The bantering is now, oh, I love the bantering. And he's like, no, you don't refer to your own banter. You know, and Lando, who seems to understand comedy beats, is kind of going, uh-huh, Carlos, okay, good. But there's obviously a camaraderie between them and it's a lot of fun.
I would very much like to get trending hashtag love Lando, because pretty much every single comment I've put on this Twitter this weekend has been hashtag love Lando because the guy's great. And yeah, I shouldn't have a man crush on a 19-year-old boy, but whatever.
Nope, it's highly inappropriate. Steve, do not edit that out. We're keeping that for the future. Steve Amy of, what's your company called? Fitbit.
No, FBIT. And if you want to know what it actually stands for, it stands for Fat Bastards Internet Technology.
Okay. Fantastic, Steve. I mean, you really are being a Steve Amy. You are in full Steve Amy mode today, which I absolutely love. Who do you give your Steve Amy thing of the weekend to?
Okay, well, I've got to say the chat room seems to think that Lando's a good choice for this. And he did pretty well, but I think that I've got to give my thing of the week to Pierre Gasly. He actually performed well this week and raced well and qualified extremely well, so you got to give him the thing of the week. He seems to have maybe thrown the hoodoo off.
Okay. I don't know about this. I don't know if this is true, but I got told that he went to Max Verstappen's setup. It was basically, right, you go to Max Verstappen's setup, and that's kind of accounted for him doing better. Didn't quite sit right well with me, Jeansy, because surely you wouldn't let him go that far and that rubbish if his setup was wrong. You'd have done that a lot earlier.
Max was chasing setup all weekend.
Okay. Yeah.
Gasly was ahead of Max for most of the practice. Gasly practiced really, really well. But yeah, I just, he was hanging on. I was really impressed with him in the first stint before the safety car. And he kind of got a bit lost after the safety car. I'm not certain what he's, oh no, they pitted him before the safety car. And then he had to do another stop, didn't he? No, I thought Gasly did well this season, much better than he has done all season. Not a lot to go on, but I want Gasly to do well because I really like Kvyat and Albon in the other seat, and I want Gasly to show what he showed last season because he was really, really impressive last season.
Okay, I'm going to give my thing of the weekend to Carlos Sainz for stepping up to the challenge of having this rookie come in and be very, very good, and stepping up to the challenge of being this great on-track ambassador for McLaren. I don't know what the championship standings are, but it just seems like Sainz and Land and Norris are trading great performances, and it's all positive coming out there at the moment, and he's won best of the rest. So I'm going to give it to Carlos Sainz, although I was tempted to give it to Williams for a 14th place. Gene Z, come on, share with the class. You're passing notes on your phone. Share with the class what it was.
It was a tweet from my new follower, MRM Madsen, with a meme about F1 fans and then a Rich Energy thing, but without actually showing the GIF, it doesn't really work. But no, it's very funny. I've liked it. I'll retweet it.
Okay. Well, I made a terrible mistake then by going to you. But since we're talking about tweeting, you can follow the show at MissedApexF1 or me personally at Spanners Ready. We also have a Facebook group. You can go to Facebook and search for Missed Apex Podcast. I think there's over 700 people in that group now, so it's very cool. But of course, you can also follow us and everything we do at our website, missedapexpodcast.com. Big shout out to Felix Bowen, who manages all the stuff on our website, and it looks much, much better than I would make if I was making a website, and you can actually navigate around it, which is fantastic. Now, it can't all be positivity. We have to do a bad thing award as well.
Oh no, you missed the apex.
Alex Van Gien, who from that side view has more grey hairs than me, so I'm happy with that. Oh yeah, look at, see my grey hairs they're not touching each other yet, so they're individual. Yours are teaming up on the other side.
It's not quite so bad. My dad started to go grey at 19 and was fully grey by the time he was like 21. So I'll take the fact that I'm salt and pepper at the moment.
Very much so. But you're only 25. That's the problem.
At 10 years.
At 10 years. Who gets your bad negativity thing award?
He gets two of them. And it's Roman Grosjean.
Oh, no. He gets two Missed Apex awards.
Oh, so he hit the pit wall.
Oh my God, I forgot about that. I forgot they hit the pit.
Seriously, I mean, Martin Brundle was very, very kind. Really, really kind. He said, you know, I'm not going to criticize anybody. Cold tires coming out the pits. They're not cold. They're 80 degrees. They're perfectly warm enough. And he hits a bump, lights up the rears and smashes into the barrier, wiping off his nose. And rather than stopping and letting the team come and rescue him, he then goes off and does a lap. And the reason he gets two Missed Apex awards is because then on his first actual lap where he didn't hit the wall, he then spins. He's a lovely bloke. He seems very, very nice. But
yeah,
I'm actually going to say what I normally say to Stroll, which is get out of my sport.
I think he might be done now after he had that. He had the crash in the pit lane, and obviously that's bad. And then the bigger error really was he should have just sat there and like waited to be towed back. He initially drove back down the pit lane, found a place to stop, and then he carried on with bits hanging off, which that just can't be the thing you're meant to do. It just can't be. And then so he's limping around the track, spewing bits everywhere. And then I'm thinking that's bad enough. Then he comes straight out and spins it at the end of the Wellington straight. And I was thinking, if I was him, I would just go home. Like if I was doing that at any level and I was having as bad a time, if I'd gone karting and that had happened to me, I'd have just got out the cart, left the cart there, and I'd just be walking off. And they'd be like, well, can you bring the cup? No, I'm done, mate. I'm done. I go, well, you won't get a refund. Yeah, no, I don't want it. I'm just done. I'm going home. All right, do you want to come back? No, I'm not coming back. That would have just been me. Steve.
Well, you've stolen my thunder. I was for exactly the same reason. Grosjean really gets it. No one else should get it this week. He really has blown it. Not only for spinning in the pit lane, hitting the pit lane and then spinning on his first outlap, but then not having enough brains to give his teammate enough room on the very first corner. I mean, for God's sake, where was his brain this weekend? I'd like to give it to someone else, you know, just for variety, but there isn't anybody else that deserves it quite like he does this weekend.
There were so many good drivers. It's actually hard to pick I don't speak sign language, Gene, so you're just going to have to say it with your words.
You're really telling me there's no one else you can give it to? I can't say it because I'll...
you want to say...
He drives a red car that's not quite a red car.
Oh, right, okay, stop there. I wasn't going to give it to Vettel. Although, if you go on my timeline, I did put a tweet up saying, convince me I'm wrong that this should be the end of Sebastian Vettel at Ferrari. And if I was a Ferrari fan, that I would now be saying, okay, it's time for Vettel to go. If you look at that thread, there's a lot of comments on there, and most of them agree. Most of them, some of them sadly agree, but most of them agree. There's hardly anyone there putting up a robust defense of why, on merit, Sebastian Vettel should stay at Ferrari. But I'm not going to do it, Jeansy. I'm not going to give him my Missed Apex award.
have my third.
I do have to give it to someone, don't I? I do have to give it to someone. No, do you know what? Super positive this week. That's wrong. I'm battling. I'm going to give it to Stroll. 14th Q1 exit in a row. Could not hold it in. 14th Q1 exit in a row. It's worse than Grosjean. Okay. Any pony awards? Anyone got a pony?
I think everyone was all right.
Oh, no. Haas gets a pony award.
Wait, hang on. 2 seconds, 2 seconds. It's not a pony award unless we play the thing.
Daddy, I want a pony. And I want it now.
Are we going to give it to a sponsor for the first time ever?
That's a good idea.
All right, well, there's a pony award definitely for William Story. Right, if you're listening, firstly, I love the, what do you call it, chutzpah? What do you call that, Jeans? Chutzpah, yeah.
Chutzpah.
Chutzpah? I mean, you can't...
You've got the token Jew on, so I can say it properly for you.
You can't deny. I mean, if you're gonna do it, lean into it, and he has. And if you would like to call the shed and get your side of the story across, would absolutely love to hear from you. And that would be fantastic. It's given us all a laugh, I guess. We've had a good time around it. Steve, are you giving the Pony Award to Rich Energy?
Yes, for their sponsorship stuff up with Hass. You know, the whole thing has just been such an unbelievable debacle. And I want to know what the real story is, you know, firstly, where they came from, where the money came from, who they are, and what brought them to Formula One. I want to know all of those things because I really still think that it's a clever move by Dieter Matasich. I think that it was Red Bull that was in those cans and it was his attempt to take over another team.
Well, there you go. I'd love to know. Invitation is open. One award left.
Comment of the week.
Any candidates, Steve?
Oh, yes, there's a couple. Duncan Henk says that Vettel deserves credit. Thanks to Vettel, Ferrari got on the podium, and that's quite true. Now, here's an interesting one. This is a two-parter.
Okay.
This is from one kind of attempt at the award from two people.
All right.
European
team effort. Said, good.
So Nick Alexander got his debut cancelled by Vettel's torpedo tactics, and then David Schenkel answered, he's not on here every week.
That's true. There you go.
So I think those two are in the running. Peter Pogson, he's also in the running. He said, oh, Sebastian, what have you done again? 100 points of lead. Oops, dribbled away. But I think that the winner has to be John Walker. And this is not because it's particularly funny. This is because it's a true statement of what went on in the race. And John Walker says, I think Hamilton still would have won, but I don't care because I was busy watching all the racing going on behind the Mercedes. And I think that's a fair comment about the race.
Absolutely. But there was racing between the Mercedes as well, and there was great racing in the pack. We've had a great weekend.
Even for us non-Mercedes fans, there was something to watch this week.
John Walker, you've won.
John Walker.
Comment of the week.
Follow the show at Missed Apex F1. The man who abandoned us mid-show, Matt Trumpets, at MattPT55, me at Spanners Ready, Alex Van Gene at Alex Van Gene. We will see you for a Joe show, hopefully sometime this week, and we will catch you. What's the next Grand Prix, lads? What's the next Grand Prix, Alex? It's got to be like Italy or something. Monza, Spa. Spa next, I think.
No, Spa's the first one after the break. I think there isn't
Germany next on the 28th.
Germany the next one, yeah.
Germany next.
And then it's a double header and then Hungary.
I'll tell you why I didn't have it on the tip of my tongue, because my mind has been focused on the 2020 calendar, which I have in my grubby mitts. When should we talk about that? Maybe we'll talk about it on a new show on Sunday. Or maybe after the show, after I click stop. But whenever it is, whenever I see you next, be brave, because wounds heal, chicks dig scars, but glory lasts forever. This was Missed Apex. It was a disappointing show. Yes, Alex Van Gene did break his hitting his boom stand record, but zero headbutts.
I didn't touch the boom stand.
Don't even know you're doing it. You're a monster. Okay, hang on. I'm going to...
I need a new table.
You need a new
table.
I need
something else.
All right, I'll click stop and then I'll tell the live stream the 2020 calendar. How's that?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.